All right. Hello, Ken. Hello, everyone. It's good to be back after a couple of weeks away in Italy. We had a marvelous pilgrimage in Italy. And for me, it was a time of really getting to know Saint Francis. Like many, many people, I've always been attracted to Saint Francis without knowing much at all about him. I knew what's in the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon. I've known that movie for several years, and I've listened to it. I watched it many, many times. But on this trip, I began my journey of becoming much more familiar with Saint Francis. Prior to going, I read some of his writings as a part of writing the Italy Contemplation Guide. While there, I read his rule. Which is kind of like the policy and procedure by which the Franciscan order is run. And I began reading his biography. I'm now just two chapters away from finishing that biography, so I'm still deep within it, and I find a lot there to really contemplate regarding it's really regarding Saint Francis and me, right? Whenever we're contemplating anything, it's about that and me. I don't think it's at all helped to contemplate Saint Francis or Ramana Maharshi or Jesus or Buddha or anyone else if we're contemplating them as outside of us and different from us. It just, doesn't do anything except maybe put them on a pedestal. So really, when I say I'm contemplating Saint Francis, I'm contemplating Saint Francis and me as one. But I'm really enjoying doing that, and I'm getting a lot out of it. So what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to begin with a song from the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon. This is called Stone by Stone. And where did it go? I had it all set up, but it's not here now. Let me try that again. Here it is. Okay, Stone by Stone. And this is sung by Buddy Comfort. Hold on. There we go. Now my computer's ready to play along. Here we go. I think it's ready to play along. There we go. It is. I thought it was. There we go.
If you want your dream to be, build it slow and surely. Small beginning, greater and heartfelt work grows purely. If you want to live life free, take your time, go slowly. Do few things, but do them well. Simple joys are holy. Day by day, stone by stone, build your secret slowly. Day by day, you'll grow too. You'll know heaven's glory. If you want your dream to be, build it slow and surely. Small beginning, greater end. Heartfelt work grows purely. If you want to live life free, take your time, go slowly. Do few things, but do them well.
So we are here now for the guiding light, and we are reading from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And tonight we begin a new section. It's called Guru and His Grace. It's on page 65. So the first question is, what is Guru Kirpa? How does it lead to self-realization? I'm just going to look up Guru Kirpa and see if that has a special meaning besides just guru. Oh, it means guru's grace. Okay, so the question is, what is the guru's grace? So what is the guru's grace, and how does it lead to self-realization? Here's Ramana Maharshi's answer. Guru is the self. Sometimes a man becomes dissatisfied with his life and, not content with what he has, he seeks the satisfaction of his desires through prayer to God. His mind is gradually purified until he longs to know God more to obtain his grace than to satisfy his worldly desires. Then God's grace begins to manifest. God takes the form of a guru and appears to the devotee, teaches him the truth, and, moreover, purifies his mind by association. The devotee's mind gains strength and is then able to turn inward. By meditation, it is further purified, and it remains still without the least ripple. That calm expanse is the self. The guru is both external and internal. From the exterior, he gives a push to the mind to turn inward. From the interior, he pulls the mind towards the self and helps in quieting the mind. That is the guru's grace. There is no difference between God, guru, and the self. So, kind of the way I want to summarize that is by saying there are no accidents. In the last several episodes of The Guiding Light, I have spoke about consciousness using the example of a dough ball. If you were here when I was explaining how there really is no such thing as reincarnation of an individual soul, right? There's no such thing as reincarnation as of an individual soul. It's consciousness incarnating again and again, and the imprints that are left on consciousness are being re-enlivened, but there's no individual soul that is reincarnating, right? You guys remember those teachings? Then you know I used consciousness, used the example of a ball of dough as consciousness. Well, everything that we perceive in manifestation is a noodle coming out of that ball of dough. So that means that if I'm sitting here as a student with a lot of suffering, and I'm asking a guru to teach me how I can transcend my suffering, and sitting in front of me, there is a very wise, enlightened guru providing answers to my questions. I am a noodle. I, the student, am a noodle from the ball of dough. And the apparent guru sitting in front of me answering my questions is also a noodle from the ball of dough. In other words, there's nothing here but the dough, or there's nothing here but consciousness. You know, I've heard Muji say to someone once when they asked him who he thought he was talking to, he said, "I'm consciousness talking to consciousness." Since there's nothing here but the consciousness, or nothing here but the ball of dough, that means that realistically, there is no difference between the outer guru and the inner guru. Realistically, there is no difference between the outer guru, the inner guru, and the book that falls off the shelf in Barnes & Noble as I happen to be walking by that hits me in the head. You know, I have a friend named Pam who talks about the way she started A Course in Miracles when she was walking through a bookstore and the book fell off the shelf and hit her in the head, A Course in Miracles, right? There's no difference between the outer guru, the inner guru, a book falling off a shelf and hitting us in the head, or any other form that leads us to start the spiritual path and then leads us on the spiritual path. It's all the clarity of consciousness. We could literally say consciousness is waking itself up. That's a very fair statement. The clarity of consciousness reaches out to the aspects of consciousness that are not yet clear and wakes itself up. If we all understood this clearly, we would never put anyone on a pedestal. As I mentioned, I'm reading the story of St. Francis now, I would say his life became very difficult in the last 10 years of his life. Because he became very well known and was perceived as a saint, even though he had not yet been canonized, he was perceived as a saint, as a holy man. And they talk about how, in the end, he had to ride on a donkey because he had some illness and injuries. They couldn't walk anymore, so he would ride on a donkey. And it talks about how people would try and touch him, try and rip off a piece of his clothing to keep for themselves, you know. You know, they saw him as special, as different from themselves, and they wanted to grab a piece of that specialness and somehow own it. Of course, we know Jesus had the same types of experiences. Ramana Maharshi. You can see Muji maybe starting to have those types of experiences. Being venerated while still in body. Very challenging for a humble teacher. Probably one of the hardest parts of the job. And that misperception comes from the belief in separateness. That misperception comes from seeing the guru as not only different from me, but better than me, holier than me. And it's a wonderful misperception for the ego. From the ego's point of view, it's a wonderful misperception because if I can see someone outside of me and different from me and holier than me, then I won't genuinely attempt to reach sainthood or enlightenment myself. So the real grace of the guru, as Ramana Maharshi describes it, is the grace of the guru is that it drives the mind inward to discover the self. It purifies the mind of its false beliefs. The mind gains strength and is able to turn inward. The real grace of the guru comes about when we don't see the guru as different from ourselves. Instead, we see the guru as a symbol of what's possible for ourselves. Right now in Gentle Healing, we're reading from NTI Revelation. And NTI Revelation in Revelation chapter 1 asks us not to, I can't think of the exact words right now. Hold on. Not to be attached, but those aren't the exact words. Let me open up. It says, the world is an illusion. And so everything you experience as you let go of the world is illusion also. You are not to believe any of it. Right? You're not to believe any of it. You are not to believe any of it. But helpful symbols will be given to guide you. Remember, they are only symbols. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. Follow them, realizing you know not where they lead. Do not idolize. That's the word I was looking for. Do not idolize anything within the world, or any symbol or any thought that is sent to lead you from the world. Hold to them as they are useful, but let them go when their usefulness has passed. You are to keep moving by letting go until you find yourself with nothing left to hold on to. So as I mentioned, consciousness is waking up consciousness. There's nothing else here. And consciousness can show up in a variety of ways. It can show up as an outer guru, can show up as an inner guru, can show up as a book, an audio, a YouTube video. But it's all still coming out of that same ball of dough. Right? It doesn't matter what the form is, it's just clarity. I remember when I was going through a phase where I kind of thought, I still saw clarity as special, which again is what we're talking about here. People see clarity as special. And when you see it as special, it means you think some people have it and some people don't. You know, it's special. If St. Francis has it and you don't, you have to try and rip off a piece of his garment while he's riding by on a donkey. When I was going through this phase of thinking clarity was special, I was given an assignment from within. And the assignment I was given is that whenever I saw clarity, just to say to myself, there it is again, right? So, you know, I would hear Muji say something, I'd recognize it as clarity, I'd say, there it is again. I'd hear Bentinho say something, I'd recognize it as clarity, I'd say, there it is again. I'd see something coming through my own pen as I sat contemplating in the morning, I'd say, there it is again. Then I'd hear something in a song, there it is again. In a movie, there it is again. Something, you know, coming out of a newscaster's mouth on the TV, there it is again. My daughter saying something, there it is again. And when I played the there it is again game, I started noticing one clarity everywhere. I quit attaching clarity to certain bodies, as if certain bodies and certain books had clarity and everything else didn't. It's all one ball of dough. It's all consciousness. There are no accidents. And when we are called to awaken, or when we choose to awaken, both of which are probably the same thing, but they may feel different. When we are called to awaken, or when we choose to awaken, consciousness is also that calling or that choice. Consciousness is that calling or that choice. And consciousness will respond to itself, to the calling, to the choice, with everything that is needed to complete the calling or complete the choice. So in that way, the guru isn't Muji, it isn't St. Francis, it isn't Jesus, it isn't A Course in Miracles, it's consciousness. And it can show up in all kinds of ways, both ways that appear to be within and ways that appear to be on the outside. But we can recognize the guru by its tendency to point us inward for reflection and meditation. We can recognize the guru by its tendency to point us inward for reflection and meditation. So let's go ahead and look at the grace of the guru again. He says, the guru is the self. And that's the same as me saying the guru is consciousness. The guru is the self. And then he appears to begin at the beginning in his answer. He says, sometimes a man becomes dissatisfied with his life, and not content with what he has, he seeks the satisfaction of his desires through prayer to God. So this is just where many of us begin. Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, maybe in the beginning I think if I just had more money, everything would be okay. Or if I had the right romantic relationship, or if I was more loving, right? We have this idea in our mind that really is still an ego-based idea about how things can be better than they are. And we often turn to God with this idea. You know, in my case, I wanted to, I said, the words I used were be only love. But at that time, what those words meant to me was to be loving always. I still saw Regina as a person who would be loving always. So it was really an improved Regina that I was seeking. It's very common for people to seek an improved persona or improved circumstances. People who are sick, not like I have a cold now, which will go away in a few days, but you know, have some kind of an illness that holds on for years and years and years, often are seeking health, right? So we seek a improved persona or improved circumstances, and that's typically the beginning of the spiritual path. But Krishna says that's still good. He says it's not the highest desire. The highest desire is to want only the truth. But any desire that gets you started on the spiritual path is good, right? We all begin somewhere. We begin at the beginning. So we begin by wanting to improve ourselves or wanting to improve our circumstances. And we pray to God and we start paying attention to teachings like A Course in Miracles, you know, thinking maybe that the miracle is going to be a better life or a better me. That's okay. That's what gets us started. So Ramana Maharshi says, sometimes a man becomes dissatisfied with his life and not content with what he has, and I would also add, or what he seems to be. He seeks the satisfaction of his desires through prayer to God. Now, when this happens, right, when we step on the path by seeking an improved self or improved circumstances, here's what happens next. His mind is gradually purified until he longs to know God. So I may be trying to learn forgiveness and let go of grievances and let go of attachments or anything else I'm learning through the spiritual path in order to get improved health. And I may still have this idea that when I do this, I'll have perfect health. The idea may be wrong, but the practices of letting go of grievances, letting go of desires, letting go of attachments, the practice is right. And as I go through the practice of letting go of false ideas, the mind is purified. And as the mind is purified, it's kind of like the mind was a veil that was able to block the heart from conscious awareness. But as the mind becomes purified, the veil begins to be lifted. And the heart begins to shine into conscious awareness. And I begin to realize that what I really want is truth, which here is being called God. And so at some point on the spiritual path, because this purification is happening, even though I started the spiritual path because I wanted a better me or I wanted better circumstances, Now that is shifting naturally to where I'm starting to want only truth. He refers to this as the grace of the guru. His mind is gradually purified until he longs to know God, more to obtain his grace and to satisfy his worldly desires. Then God's grace begins to manifest. Now at this point, once we start to realize that we want truth, the desire for truth is a very powerful communication device. Again, it communicates into consciousness. It's consciousness communicating with consciousness, saying, I want to awaken to what we are. I want to awaken to what I am. I want to awaken to the truth. And consciousness responds to that request by bringing everything that is needed to further that awakening process, including your inner teacher, your outer teacher, any books that are helpful for you to contemplate. So, God's grace begins to manifest. God takes the form of a guru and appears to the devotee. Well, consciousness takes the form of clarity and appears to the devotee. God takes the form of a guru and appears to the devotee, teaches him the truth, and moreover, purifies his mind by association. So the purification process is continuing, but now it's a little more focused. The goal has been refined. The devotee's mind gains strength and is then able to turn inward. So before we had an outer focus, right? We thought that others knew the truth and I needed to learn the truth from this other, or that the truth was in certain books and I needed to learn the truth from those books. But now I'm beginning to realize that, you know, consciousness and the clarity of consciousness is within me. I no longer need to chase after St. Francis and rip his clothes off. I need to go set in my own cave. I need to uncover what's in me. The devotee's mind gains strength and is then able to turn inward. By meditation, it is further purified, right? Purification continues. And it remains still without the least ripple. The person is able to sit in awareness, watching awareness, without any attention on thought. That calm expanse is the self. That's realizing consciousness as consciousness without any manifestation. The guru is both external and internal. From the, in quotes, exterior, he gives a push to the mind to turn inward. From the interior, he pulls the mind toward the self and helps in quieting the mind. That is the guru's grace. There is no difference between God, guru, and the self. There is no difference between consciousness, outer forms of teachers and books, and the inner teacher. It's all consciousness. And because of my cold, I need to take a little break. So I'm going to play another St. Francis song, just a little one. Here we go.
Brother, son, and sister, I seldom see you, seldom hear your tune. Preoccupied with selfish misery. Brother wind and sister air, open my eyes to visions pure and fair, that I may see the glory around me. I am God's creature, of Him I am part. I feel His love awakening my heart. Brother sun and sister moon, I now do see you, I can hear your tune. So much in love with all that I survey.
Was a good song to accidentally pick, as if there are accidents, because he talked about feeling God's love awakening his heart, and that's exactly what we're talking about with the grace of the guru, isn't it? What I want to do is just shift gears for a moment, especially since I don't know what I did with the book on break, but I want to shift over to the teachings of Inner Ramana for a second, because the teachings of Inner Ramana talks about the grace of the guru. This is on page 93 of the teachings of Inner Ramana. The teacher has come. And the teacher has come at the request of the student. Although the student did not consciously ask for this form of the teacher, this form has been given, because this form is a match to the heart of the student. So just pausing with that, I mentioned a while ago that it's all one big dough ball, or it's all consciousness, right? And that the awakening process begins with what might be perceived as a calling, or what might be perceived as a choice. You might feel like you made the decision to start the awakening process, or you might feel like there was just this calling that you couldn't say no to. Either way, it's ultimately the same thing. But when this calling or this choice happens, there's an asking that begins to happen from within. The asking for what I need, right, to awaken me, to enlighten me. Again, in the beginning, we may still be thinking in order to become this better self, or in order to achieve these better circumstances, but a realization has occurred that I can't get there, wherever there is, I can't get there my way. That I need guidance from something bigger than me, right? Greater than me. And so this is why we begin praying to God or universe or however we begin. We begin asking. And when we begin asking, this asking, which actually even comes from consciousness in the first place, the asking wasn't our idea, whether we think it was or not. It comes from consciousness in the first place. And so definitely consciousness is going to answer it. But the way in which consciousness answers it is something we have no control over, nor should we want to control it. I mean, what would know better how to awaken consciousness to itself than awake consciousness? I'll say that again. What would know better how to awaken consciousness to itself than awake consciousness? So when we start asking for help from beyond ourselves, We also want to trust the help that comes in whatever form that it comes in, and we don't want to say, oh no, you know, that's not what I wanted. I wanted, you know, something different. You know, I came from a Christian background, and my early dabblings with spirituality were Christian in nature. And when I first started asking for the better me, the loving, the one that's always loving, the loving me, I was brought to A Course in Miracles, which of course is Christian in nature. And then I was guided to read the New Testament and have it interpreted for me, which is Christian in nature. But after NTI and after my relationship with Laurent, when I asked for something to take me to the next step, it brought me in a Ramana. Now, I had no prior interest in Indian gurus. Zero, 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 zero. Did I say zero? Zero. In fact, I remember when Laurent would sometimes bring up Ramana Maharshi or Aurobindo, I just got annoyed. I wanted nothing to do with them. So I did not ask for this form of the guru. What I asked for was something to take me to the next step on the awakening process. And inner Ramana is what was given. Consciousness knows how to awaken consciousness. So if inner Ramana is what was given in my, you know, as in relation to my request, then inner Ramana is perfect. And I do well to surrender, to be the humble devotee, and to accept the form the teaching is given in, instead of seeking with the mind to find, you know, a teaching that's more suitable to my taste, you know, maybe another Christian-based teaching. I mean, if we're not going to be surrendered when we ask for help, will we ever let go of the ego? So again, the first paragraph says, the teacher has come. And the teacher has come at the request of the student. Although the student did not consciously ask for this form of the teacher, this form has been given. Because this form is a match to the heart of the student. Do not doubt that the teacher and student are one, right? Consciousness, awakening consciousness. Do not doubt that the teacher and student are one. The teacher merely speaks for the student that she may see her own heart more clearly. So while the mind can still be a veil, can still confuse us about who we are and what we want, the teacher speaks for us from our true self, awakened consciousness. Do not doubt that the teacher and student are one. The teacher merely speaks for the student that she may see her own heart more clearly. It is as if I have come to abide in your heart for a time. I have lit a campfire there. And I sit by that fire singing the songs of the heart. But that is only so you can hear yourself more clearly and recognize yourself above the chatter of the mind, so you may return to you there in the center of the heart. And isn't that the primary mistake? Is that we believe we are the mind. You know, if the mind says, I don't want an Indian guru, you know, I want something Christian-based, let me go see if I can find something Christian-based. You know, aren't I doing that because I believe I am the mind? If the mind says, I don't want an Indian guru, I want something Christian-based, I believe that's me. And I go looking for the form of the teaching that I prefer, rather than the one that was given. It's because I believe I am the mind. But I am not the mind. And the guru that is given, whether it be an inner guru or an outer guru or a book, the guru that is given is the best one for me now because consciousness knows what's best for me now. So the guru that is given is the best one for me now to help me recognize myself over the chatter of the mind. I will just surrender to the guru that is given. I will recognize myself in that guru. Because that's why that guru was given, to help me recognize myself. And this, I suppose, takes me back to why I said at the beginning of this hour that I'm contemplating St. Francis and me. When I read St. Francis, I find me. I don't find some guy that lived in 1200 AD. I find me. And I'm contemplating me, both my true desires, my mistakes, my confusions. They're all there in him. And he was given to me at this point in my journey, right now at this point, because this point is perfect, for me to continue my purification and my awakening process by contemplating him/me. Symbols are given, and later symbols are taken away. Everything comes at exactly the right time, and when it goes, we let it go. Because consciousness knows how to awaken consciousness. We are not to be attached to or to idolize anything that is sent to awaken us, or to use it for as long as it's useful. And when its usefulness is past, to let it go. It is as if I have come to abide in your heart for a time. I have lit a campfire there, and I sit by that fire singing the songs of the heart. That is only so you can hear yourself more clearly and recognize yourself above the chatter of the mind, so you may return to you there in the center of the heart. This is the grace of the guru. I light a little fire to shine a light on your home. But when you come, you light the chamber fully, for you are the light that is home. So that's the grace of the guru from the teachings of Inner Ramana. So now I'm going to go back to the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, the guru and his grace, and I'm looking at the second question on page 65. In the Theosophical Society, they meditate in order to seek masters to guide them. Really just a statement, not even a question. So a devotee makes that statement, and then Ramana Maharshi responds. So again, in the Theosophical Society, they meditate in order to seek masters to guide them. Ramana says, the master is within. Meditation is meant to remove the ignorant idea that he is only outside. If he is a stranger whom you await, he is bound to disappear also. Where is the use for a transient being like that? But as long as you think you are separate, or that you are the body, so long as the master without also necessary, and he will appear as if with a body. When the wrong identification of oneself with the body ceases, the master will be found as none other than the self. So it's interesting, because again the statement was, in the Theosophical Society, they meditate in order to seek masters to guide them. And Ramana Maharshi corrects that idea by saying the master is within. Though he does go on to say that masters that appear on the outside will be provided. And again, they can show up as books, they can show up as physical teachers, they can even show up as visions. You know, Francis had many visions of Christ teaching him. But I think error was seeking a specific form. Remember when we were looking at the grace of the guru in the teachings of Inner Ramana, what had happened was I had just asked for something to take me to the next step. And what was given, because it was the best match for my heart at the time, was Inner Ramana. It's a mistake to seek a specific form of guru. It's a mistake to think that you need, for example, an outer teacher, and for you to go around seeking your outer teacher. Or it's a mistake to think you shouldn't have an outer teacher, it should come from the inner teacher. Or it's a mistake to think if you know that you'll really learn best if you're having visions of Christ or visions of some other teacher. It's a mistake to think you know the form that consciousness should take in order to wake you up. Because the mind you're thinking with is the unenlightened mind. It's awake consciousness that knows what you need, not you. So when we ask, we should be generic in our asking. Please give me whatever it is that I need now to take me to the next step towards truth or enlightenment. Please provide me whatever is most helpful for me. We don't seek specific forms. That seeking of specific form is still a belief in form as important. So whether you are given a physical outer guru, an inner guru, a book, or visions, should really be irrelevant to you, because it's all consciousness. It's all noodles, right? What's important to you is the teaching that's coming from consciousness. You know, what if I wasn't satisfied? I'm in a biography of St. Francis right now. And there's a lot of contemplation that's happening as I'm reading this biography. But what if I wasn't satisfied with that? What if I was saying, well, gosh, you know, I was right there in Italy, right there in San Damiano for hours and hours and hours. Why didn't St. Francis appear to me as a vision? You know, then I'd be totally focused on form and not at all focused on the perfect contemplation for me that is being given to me right now. So what if it's coming through reading a biography? So what if it's coming through reading a biography? So what? And just because I happen to be finding something meaningful for St. Francis right now, doesn't mean that you have to. You know, like if there's this thought, oh no, Regina went to Italy, and in addition to a cold, she picked up a lot of deep contemplation from St. Francis, which is still happening with her. Oh no, you know, nothing like that happened for me. I should have the same thing. Who says? What if you just ask for whatever's helpful for you and trust that it will be given, and trust whatever comes. So the mistake they were making at the Theosophical Society was thinking that they needed to attract masters to guide them, thinking they knew how to wake themselves up, instead of just asking for whatever is most helpful. In the Theosophical Society, they'd meditate in order to seek masters to guide them. Ramana Maharshi says, the master is within. Meditation is meant to remove the ignorant idea that he is only outside. If he is a stranger whom you await, he is bound to fear also. Where is the use for a transient being like that? That as long as you think you are separate, as long as you think you are separate, or that you are the body, so long is the master without also necessary, and he will appear as if with the body. You don't have to ask for him, right? You know, there's a scripture in the Bible where it says the Father knows what you need even before you ask. So if a physical guru is helpful to you, the physical guru will be given. You don't need to ask for him. I notice Cindy's asking if we could turn up the volume. I suppose I can get a little closer to the microphone if that's what you need. I was kind of sitting back a little bit. But as long as you think you are separate, or that you are the body, so long is the master without also necessary, and he will appear as if with a body. When the wrong identification of oneself with the body ceases, the master will be found as none other than the self. In other words, when you see yourself as consciousness, you realize that everything that was given to help awaken you was consciousness. Right? It didn't matter whether it was inner teacher, outer teacher, book, or vision. It was all consciousness. It was all noodles. It was consciousness awakening consciousness. So again, attachment to a specific form is a mistake. You know, the ego identifies with form. The ego is identification with form. And so when we think we need a specific form, that idea is coming from the ego. So we should just forget about form and ask for guidance and trust whatever way that guidance comes. There are no accidents. Consciousness is awakening consciousness, and we can trust all things. And that's it for me today, so I release the mic. See y'all later.